Hi, we want to welcome you back to the Enduring Churches podcast. I'm Alan, and I'm so glad to have you listening to us in 2021. It's got to be better than 2020. At least we certainly hope and pray that it will be. And I'm here with Trent Young. And Trent, I'm so glad that we get to start a new year together. But we're not alone today. So tell us about our special guest.
Sure, Alan. I got to know a gentleman by the name of Mike Kahn not too long ago, and I've just been inspired by his heart for the community and the things that he's getting to do in schools and businesses. And so today we get to visit. And so welcome, Mike. We're so glad you're here with us today.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure, Trent, Alan. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, man, we're excited. And so we're going to get to visit with you a little bit. And so, Mike, I want to ask you, first of all, if you wouldn't mind, since maybe some folks are listening don't know you, will you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, and what you are doing?
Absolutely. Married my beautiful bride of 21 years. And so love being married to her. We've got three beautiful kids. One's a freshman in college, just starting her official second semester, and she's doing a fantastic job. We got two boys, one a freshman and one a seventh grader. So I'm a big family guy. I love everything that we get a chance to do to serve together. I sing my first song in church when I was six. I trusted Jesus when I was nine. I surrendered to ministry when I was a senior in high school, and I got my first church job at 19, and I have no idea what they were thinking, but if they could go back and start over, definitely there's been lots of learning since then. But the truth is, just like you guys, I mean, I love the local church. I love who the church is supposed to be. And the church has never been about any building. It's always been about the people. And sometimes we forget that. And sometimes I forget that. And so I think conversations like this are really, really good to help us kind of remember some of the main points of what we're doing and why we started doing it. And certainly this is always iron sharpening iron. So I love these conversations, and I'm a big community guy. I think a lot of times the church look inside the walls instead of looking out to the community and to see what are our preferences, instead of the conviction of go and make disciples, and as you go, make disciples of all nations and baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teach them what I've commanded you. And remember, I'm always with you. We know that's true, but sometimes that falls prey to our preferences. And so I think the more conversations we can have about keeping Jesus at the very center of the church, the better off that we'll be.
Well, I love your heart for the church, and I love your heart for community and that whole idea. You know, it's hard sometimes, I think, for us in our church life to remember the world outside the church. So talk to us a little bit about your life mission and maybe the kind of the biblical basis for what you feel called to do.
I, for the longest time, I knew that I was supposed to serve, but I didn't really know in what capacity. So I did what opportunities became available. And I've done everything from youth ministry to worship ministry to kids ministry to most recently lead pastoring. And over the past, probably, even though I've been in ministry for nearly 25 years, probably about 4 years ago, it started becoming a lot more clear to me of what my purpose is. And very simply, I don't just want to see people. I want to help people feel seen. In the same way that Jesus helped the woman at the well feel seen. He shouldn't even really have been in a conversation with her culturally, but he helped her feel seen and feel valued. And the woman who was caught in adultery and was paraded around for guilt and shame and disgrace, he helped her feel seen and feel valued. And even Peter, we in the church, man, we love Peter because he gives us hope for some of the things that we do that we wish we could undo. But, well, at least Peter did something similar. And I mean, he cut off a dude's ear in defense of Jesus, right? But even after he denied Jesus, he denied even knowing who Jesus was three times right before Jesus died. Jesus does what he said he was going to do. He is risen. And then he and Peter have breakfast on the beach. And I have no idea how that breakfast started, like Jesus sitting on a stool cooking the fish and he just kind of slides a stool over in the stand. And then Peter sits down and we don't know how the conversation began, but we do know how it ended because Jesus used Peter to establish the church and he preached one of the most famous sermons, one of the most fruitful, I guess, if you want to look at the instant decisions, sermons in the history of the world. When 3,000 people came to faith that day. So even though Peter denied Jesus three times, at least, Jesus didn't write him off. He helped him feel seen and feel valued. He didn't feel like he was damaged goods. And that's what I want to do every day for the rest of my life in whatever capacity it is. If it's in schools, if it's in businesses, if it's in line at Walmart, I mean, for the love, who doesn't need to feel seen and valued at Walmart? Like that's, but that's not our default. Our default in this this cultural environment, instead of to see some of our similarities, we're quick to see our differences. But then instead of using our differences as a superpower to complement one another, we allow our differences to make us adversaries. And then my difference has to be better than your difference. And then we miss out on the beauty of collaboration. We miss out on all these opportunities to get to work together. So, I mean, I've been a part of in church life for all those years, man. I've been a part of those Monday morning conversations where someone says, they pat you on the arm and say, "Hey brother, how was church yesterday? How many did you guys have?" dot, dot, dot. Mm-hmm. And what we really hope they're going to say is, one less than you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have all of these competitions. And I think the church, man, some of our greatest superpowers would be if we would trade competition for collaboration and forget. It's kind of like the old adage with sports. I mean, you forget about the name on the back of the jersey and look to the name on the front of the jersey, right? Like this is all who God is calling us to be. And there are lots of communities where the churches, the leaders of the church are stepping back instead of stepping up. And so all of that to say, I feel like God has really been molding me and shaping me and breathing new life into this purpose of being for people.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, Mike. I know that you and I have talked about this some, and it seems like anymore, just like Peter or the woman caught in adultery, they would think that Jesus would be against them because of what they've done and who they are. And unfortunately, it seems like that the church is just known for what we're against. And I like that you've kind of changed that around and are trying to show what we're for.
Well, you know, there's a guy named Jeff Henderson based out of Atlanta, and he was with Gwinnett Church and with the North Point Network of Churches, and he's recently launched his own company, and it's called The Four Company. And he said something really profound. He said, you know, I say profound kind of tongue in cheek, because I was really a little offended and a little, I kind of pushed back a little bit when I heard it. He said, you know, the church has been known for too long for what we're against. Let's be known by who and what we're for. And at first I'm like, what kind of crap is he talking about? The church being known by what we're against. And then I looked back and said, here, 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 here. These are all ways where instead of leaning into the person and helping them feel seen and feel valued and helping them know that we're for them, we took a stand against something instead of being for someone. And I mean, I think, you know, one of the greatest, I almost posted on social media, I almost made a post that said, hey, if you want to be known by what you're against, these are three ways to be known by what you're against, and then post these three things. Of course, the only reason I would say that is so I could tell you three ways to be for someone. But, yeah. You know, the interesting thing I think that Jeff has helped me to see, and I've really taken it to the max as far as in the schools and in the businesses and any conversation that I can have with somebody. Listen, the goal is not to be the best church, if we're talking about church. It's not to be the best church in the community, but it's to be the best church for the community. It's not to be the best business, the best restaurant in the community. What if you were known as being the best restaurant for the community. It's not just your service in-house, but also if you can donate tea to whoever you can in town. I mean, I know that Alan is a cross-country coach. Man, I know there's no shortage of opportunities for someone in the community to say, hey, Coach Alan, we want you guys to know that we're for you, so we'd love to donate some cases of water or Gatorade or anything like that. Like you don't have to couch that with a, if you were to die tonight, would you? You don't have to bring
right,
that up.
Right. Yeah.
We can just be for people and then trust the God who created the universe, and he breathed the stars into place, and he knows how many hairs are in our head and every word we're going to say before it gets to the tip of our tongue. We can trust that God to bring the perfect opportunity for the reaping, but our job is to do the sowing.
Yeah, I love what you're talking about. And I think one of the good things that's going to come out of the COVID time and all the quarantines, you know, as church pastors, it's impossible to track our numbers right now. Mm-hmm. So many people are watching online. So many people aren't coming. All of a sudden, if you use attendance as everything that matters to you, you're going to lose your mind because you can't do that right now. So you have to come up with new metrics of what's important. And I think one of the things that God is using in this time is this idea of the church is not what takes place on Sunday morning when we're gathered together. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, that what's going on when we're not gathered together. What is our mission field?
I totally agree with that. Totally agree with that. And you're, I mean, we've got all these invisible landmines. We don't even know what we're trying to avoid. I mean, we know we want to avoid catastrophe, but we don't know if when we engage in a conversation online about politics, if it's going to just disintegrate or if it's going to shut not only the conversation with that one person down, but everyone who's in that person's readership or followership or however that all works. And it can absolutely be paralyzing. And I think that's why it's so vital for us to look at the history we have with God individually and how he's always been there for us, even in the times when, you know, we do our job. We're in front of the crowd. We lead the best way we can. We pour everything out, and then we get back to moments of solitude. And then we wonder, man, God, you know, I got this big thing coming up and I don't have any idea what to do with it. So I'm just going to try to trust you. And then the words that we just spoke to people about having faith in God and trusting him to provide for all of your needs and all those different things, those words come rushing back to us, but they sound different than they did going out. And it's just a gentle reminder, I think, from God to say, hey, I know things are different. And man, 2021, you know, we've all by now probably already made our list of things we want to be better than the 2020 that we experienced. But I think if we run past it without embracing what God has shown us, then, man, we're doing a huge disservice. It's kind of like we're saying, hey, God, thanks for, you know, this pandemic, but I don't really need anything from you out of it. So let's just pretend like 2020 didn't happen. Let's move on to 2021. And now here's my checklist. And especially in the church, I think that's dangerous territory.
Well, I agree, Mike. And I think that, you know, we forget that God causes all things to work together for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And so 2020 is one of those all things, right? And so instead of being thankful that God moved and touched lives in 2020, we just griped at him and expected him to give us an excuse, an explanation. And I totally agree with you. But I really want to spend some time talking about the things that you're doing because you have a heart for the community. I want you to talk some about the schools, the programs that you're getting to do in the schools.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to do that. I get a chance to go into the schools and I don't ever pray and I don't say the name Jesus. Unless there have been a couple of isolated incidences where one of the teachers on staff just found out they've got cancer. or they've got some big life thing and they're like, hey, you're a pastor too, right? Yeah, sure. And so can you come in and pray? Yeah, sure. I'll be glad to pray with you, but that's not why I go in there. I go in to the schools to help students navigate their social and emotional issues, which is kind of a long way around saying I go into the schools to help the students feel seen. I get to teach. I teach out of three main buckets: cultivate culture, choose to collaborate, and then servant leadership. Culture is so much more than what we often think it is, but very simply, culture is the way we do what we do or the way we allow it to be done. And if we would turn the words we use instead of as weapons to try to tear people down, if we would, one of the topics that I teach on is an H2O filter, and it's a filter for our words. We want to bring hope to the person we're talking to and bring honor to the person we're talking about, and then look for an opportunity to serve. Which sounds a whole lot like don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only that which is useful to build up the church. Sounds very similar.
Yes, and that's
by design. Empathy is one of my favorite things to teach about. I get to go in and teach empathy versus apathy. Those two words sound so much alike, but they couldn't be further apart in meaning. And the best way I know to develop empathy is to be quick to listen, be slow to speak, and be slow to get angry. And I don't have to tell them that came straight out of James 1:19. That's Jesus' little brother talking. I don't have to tell them any of that. I can just lean into them and just give them really, really good advice on how to make better choices. I don't want to misrepresent it. I'm not just trying to find ways to sneak scripture into schools. That's not at all what I'm interested in. I just knew that I heard a lot of adults saying, kids these days, and what followed that never really ended well. And so it started with fifth graders. And so I went to one of the local elementary schools. We have five elementary schools here at Duncan. And I went to one of the fifth grade teachers, and this was in April, maybe early May. And I smiled and said, your fifth graders have developed a reputation, and it's not great. Could I have 30 minutes with them before they go to middle school? And she smiled and said, no, but I'll give you an hour. So we scheduled a time for me to come in, and I just wrote a few things, four things on a note card. And I really wanted them to know that there's a dude in Duncan who's for them, who doesn't have to be for them. I also told them they're entering the most selfish phase of their life. So let's make great choices. And there's some other things that came out of that. And then I developed from that four points on a note card, I developed a 9-session framework on leadership for fifth graders. And so then I got to go into the first year. I went into several different elementary schools, 8 elementary schools in all, and got to do 77 sessions. So the funny thing is, I don't know if it's funny, but I've got some buddies in ministry. They said, so you're allowed into the public schools? I'm like, no, I'm not allowed. I'm invited. That's different. Oh, how do you get invited? Can you help me get invited? Yeah, write this down. Step one to get invited into the schools, don't be a jerk. Step two, don't come in with the goal to win souls to the Lord at the public school during public school hours, because then that'll be the last time you came in, maybe the first and last time you came in. And so it started with fifth graders, and then it developed, of course, right after 13 Reasons Why came out on Netflix. There were lots of opportunities in the middle school and high school to have some conversations there. So then now we've really, it's the opportunities are K through 12. We're actually making, of course, 2020 really, let me reframe this. 2020 really gave me a great opportunity to, reshape how we do it, since you can't just always now just go into the local schools, masked or no masked. So we've been working on making some video sessions that easily would be able to serve more than one community at a time. And so I'm really excited about what's been happening. So far in all, we've done over 370 sessions. And that sounds like a lot, at least it sounds like a lot to me. But I've got a great friend who asked me a couple of years ago, he said, "Hey, Mike, how many sessions do you want to do?" And I just kind of looked at him and smiled and said, "Well, as many as get." And then he stopped me and put his finger in my face. And he said, "Don't you dare say as many as God will let me." I'm like, "Ouch, you stepped on my toes there, buddy. That's a little more firm than I wanted." And he said, "Put a number on it, because if you believe what you say you believe about honoring God and doing good and all those things, then this will be a great exercise for you." All right. So a couple of days later, after I prayed about it, I called him up and I said, "Hey, I've got the number, but it's too big. I've got this number, but I'm really not okay with it. I don't see any way that I can do it." And he stopped me again and he said, "Tell me the number. I'm going to hang up on you." I'm like, okay, with friends like that. But so I said, "The number is 500,000 sessions." And I thought he would say, "Wow, look at you and your big faith and your big God and all that stuff." And he said, "Huh, sounds like a great start for the God who owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. I'm like, Oh man, I think that's checkmate. I'm pretty sure my buddy just put me in checkmate on the telephone. So now it's really been helpful for me to say, "Okay, God, I don't know what this roadblock is or how to navigate it, but I do know that this dream didn't come from me. This vision didn't come from me. I'm not nearly that creative or smart or ambitious. So I need for you to open doors, and I'll do my best to step through them." And that's what's happened. And so we've had some business owners in the community say, "Oh, you help students navigate their social emotional issues. Huh, that sounds a lot like developing soft skills in the workplace. Can you come in and help my customer service team?" I mean, I'll do my best. Of course. I mean, I don't want to sound arrogant. Yeah, I'd love to come in and chat with them. And so we've been able to have some conversations, some great conversations in the workplace as well. And really, through those conversations, I'm pointing everybody back to community, because organizations don't drift towards unity. They have to be led there. They don't drift towards community. They've got to be led there. And so if you can encourage and inspire the leaders to grab their rope and then take a step or two towards the common ground, towards community, then you can get so much synergy developed that people really, in my opinion, have no choice but to look and see how God's provided and protected and guided the way. So that's a really long-winded answer, Trent, to your question. But I say it's long-winded, but you know that I could turn that into a 2-hour monologue.
I love that you also get into the business world, because you know, businesses struggle too, and we have conversations about how culture is so important. So if a business was interested in hearing from you, I think they maybe get an idea of what you talk about in the schools. What do you talk about with businesses?
Well, with businesses, the first thing that I do is I go in and short introduction, and we make a list. Okay, what are 5 things you're really good at? And at first, you know, we're like, I thought we were getting in trouble. Like, we're all together, we're talking about things we're good at. Yeah, what are 5 things you're good at? And we make a list or put it on the whiteboard. And we'll get to 5 things. And then once we get to these 5 things, I'll say, okay, of these 5 things, what are you the best at? And then they'll not want to sound kind of braggy. So it turns into a bit of a conversation. But then we identify, what are you the best at? And then we circle it. Okay, great. This is the thing that you're the best at. Now, how did you get to be the best at it? Who's your customer? Who are the different customers? And so we essentially jot out a procedure or a system that they use. And then I draw a line and I smile and put my right hand in my pocket. And I say, the first question I asked you was, what are you great at? What are you good at? Now I give you 3 guesses and the first 2 don't count. What my next question is. And they kind of laugh. And then I say, okay, but I don't want 5 things that you need improvement on. Let's call it what needs improvement. Let's just go with 2. And every single time, one of those 2 is communication and the other one is a derivative of the communication. No matter what they're good at, one of the biggest problems is communication. And one of the other biggest problems is another part of communication. And so then we get to take this system of things that you're already good at and try to overlay that onto the problem area. Because the truth is, problems are to be solved, but people are to be valued. Problems are always to be solved, but people are always to be valued. And a lot of times what we do is we take a problem and then we attach it to someone's face, or we attach it to someone's personality. We personify the problem. And then, of course, that creates all kinds of mess in the workplace. And so then the next part of the conversation is, I ask, do you feel like you're a coworker or a teammate? Because we've all been on versions of teams, even if it's not athletic teams and it's not academic teams, it's not band teams. There's somewhere that's a common thread. The majority of people have been on a team at some point. And you know when you feel like an outsider. You know when you feel like, well, I'm not really part of the team, but we are in the same place at the same time. And a lot of times in the workplace, we feel like coworkers instead of teammates. And I don't Google it. I don't put a survey on Twitter to see, do you feel like you're more of a coworker or a teammate in the workplace? Because when I'm having the conversation with the group at the insurance company or at the restaurant or wherever I'm meeting with, I want them to know this is real data and this is you. So how do we move if you've got 15 people on the team and you've got six of them that feel like coworkers and nine of them that feel like teammates? How do we move the needle to where those six don't just feel like coworkers, but they feel like teammates? They feel seen, they feel valued. So we talk about feedback. I mean, communication has several different variations, but really it boils down into input and feedback. Input is when I'm asking you for input before the product launches or before we take it to market or before the presentation. Feedback is, this is what I've decided. What do you think about it? And one of the talks I do on feedback is, I call it the human pinata, because most of the time our feedback is, hey, Mike, a little feedback on your speaking. Don't put your right hand in your pocket. Hey, Mike, a little feedback on your speaking. Don't chew gum when you're speaking. Hey, Mike, a little feedback on your speaking. Don't look at your notes. Hey, Mike, a little feedback, whatever it is. And then, we coin it feedback, but we really just want to grab the stick and take a whack at somebody, and we call it feedback. It's kind of like the unspoken prayer request.
Yeah.
And so really just trying to reframe it and say, listen, feedback doesn't have to be that way. In fact, your feedback should always be built on encouragement. If your feedback is not designed to encourage and build up, again, back to Ephesians 4:29, if your feedback is not designed to build up and encourage, and it's not feedback, it's target practice.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And if I'm the giver of feedback and I hear that, I'm like, again, what kind of crap is that? What are you, a two on the Enneagram? Yeah, I'm a two. I'm a blue. Like I'm a heart guy. And I need for you to know that when you're communicating with a heart guy and your feedback is 7 points of do betters and one, hey, this wasn't horrible.
Yeah.
Or even this was good. I'm not going to hear the thing that you said was good. I'm going to hear the things that you said weren't nearly good enough, which, and I don't mean you got to, have like a cuddling corner where you take people and you say, oh, I know you need a little extra. I don't mean anything weird and creepy. I just mean, let's take the things that we know are true in life and let's also build it into the workplace where we don't normally have time to do that. Normally our evaluations aren't a whole bunch of, hey, let's really, to Andy Stanley's point, let's dissect what you did well so we can actually reproduce the good things instead of just working on your weaknesses.
Well, Mike, as you're talking about this, and you and I have gotten to talk at length about these things, and I come away inspired every time that I visit with you, and that, hey, we all say that we should be in the schools, and that's a great mission place, and we all say we should be involved in business, but I appreciate that you're actually doing it and inspiring other people that are Christians to do that as well. And so I'm so thankful that you are doing that. And
Trent, man, I really appreciate that. Thank you. It means a lot to me.
Well, it's true, man. I'm excited and I want to learn more so that I can do it better. Cause I'm thinking with fifth graders, that would not be my target that I would do very well with. I'm thinking so.
Listen, with fifth grade, the very first time, I just didn't want to die. Like, and I was a children's pastor the first time, but they were normally, quote, on my turf, right, at church. Mm-hmm. And so it was Mr. Mike, and I get to choose the music. And if we use a strobe light or we don't, which we didn't, but I get to choose these things. But then when I'm going into your turf and your classroom, I'm like, hello, boy. Like, I was just nervous. And then after session 10, I'm like, okay, I'm getting the hang of it a little bit. But then after session 20, something in me changed. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can do everything I've done for 20 years on Wednesday nights. Just don't pray and don't say Jesus. I can do would you rathers. I mean, we don't play Gorilla Man Gun, but we got, you know, whatever your camp games are that you've got with guitars or whatever, I can do that and then bring something that's going to be a little bit of hope. I want smiles. I want to listen with my eyes to what they're saying, because what they're saying with their face sometimes, as we all know, matters more than what they're saying with their words. So I got really a lot of confidence with that, but not at the beginning. At the beginning, I just didn't want to die. Like, not literally die, probably, but just like, oh, how's this even going to go? And so, I mean, luckily I've got some kids at that time that were just the right amount, just the ripe age of a good target audience, like for some testing. So anyway, they,
our kids good. Will get us back someday for that one, won't they?
Absolutely. Right.
Well, Mike, I appreciate you so much, and I'm so grateful that you took time to join us. And this is a great way to kick off a brand new year. But I don't want to leave today without letting people know how they could get in touch with you. So would you tell us how they can get in touch with you? And we'll put a link also on our notes.
Yeah, man, Mike, thank you again. And I know that as some people are listening to this and I hear you saying, you know, you just don't have to pray or say Jesus in school. And some people, I know, and I've talked to some of these guys that they're very offended by that. But let me just tell you, and having talked to Mike, he has a heart to share Jesus. And the goal is to be able to start relationships. And so I want to, I guess, come to the defense of Mike early and say that this is a great way to do this, to begin to value people so that they can come to you when they have a real hurt and don't feel pressured into something. And so, man, I've enjoyed this so much, Mike. It's been great. And I appreciate you again.
I appreciate that, Trent, so much. And really, I think the last thing I would say is it's really about the mindset. It's a missionary mindset. I believe the local school is the greatest mission field in every town. And when I say that in front of pastors, they say, amen. And I smile and say, how's your mission work going? And if we would treat the local community, the local schools, like we treat the house church in China or the village in Mexico that we're going to build homes for, which are both tremendous things. And I've been on those trips and I love those trips. But on those trips, you don't walk in and you don't say, hey, local village leader, this is how I'm going to do it. That's not how we do it. We say, thank you so much. I'm an honored guest. I'm not a visitor. Visitors can be prosecuted for trespassing. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me in. And I'll take advantage of every opportunity, every hospitality you're providing for me. We play by their rules to be able to bring hope. And I think that really is the thing that shifted in front of me, because the majority of the church leaders I know don't get in that don't get in the school, it's because we only know one way to begin and end a service, and that's by prayer. And if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. No, this is not that. This is saying, hey, I have something. I want to serve you. Jesus didn't come in with a clipboard. He came in with a towel, right? Like, I want to serve you any way that I can. And when I finally got that mindset shift, then it changed everything for me. And so I guess that would be my encouragement to anyone who feels like I'm maybe watering it down or whatever the other well-intentioned pushback would be, is I just don't want to forfeit my opportunity to be an influence. And that, I mean, that's essentially why, that's not essentially why, that's exactly why my method is the way that it is now, because I'm having opportunities to go places that that won't come to me. You know, build it and they will come is a great premise for a baseball movie from 1989.
Yeah,
but it's a horrible strategy for church life.
Well, Mike, you know, we're recording this before Christmas, even though it's coming out in the new year, and that's exactly what God did. He met us on our turf, and that's what we are all called to do. And I'm so appreciative that you take that to heart and that God has opened those doors for you to do that. And I would encourage you in your community, you can certainly reach out to Mike. He would love to come help you reach out to your community as well. And he can do that by being part of that process and one piece of the puzzle for reaching your community for Christ. Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. I know this one is going to be a tremendous help to many of you. So please share it with someone else and know that Trent and I are here in 2021 to come alongside you and help you out and help your church out. So don't hesitate to reach out to us on our website at enduringchurches.com, or you can reach us through our social media as well on Facebook at Enduring Churches. So thanks again for joining us today. It's great starting a new year off with you, and we hope you have a wonderful, wonderful beginning to 2021.